Osho, Dang Dang Doko Dang. Talks on Zen, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 3.
Bhagwan, after Bankei had passed away, a blind man who lived near the master's temple said to a friend, "Since I am blind, I cannot watch a person's face, so I must judge his character by the sound of his voice. Ordinarily, when I hear someone congratulate another upon his happiness or success, I also hear a secret tone of envy. When condolence is expressed for the misfortune of another, I hear pleasure and satisfaction, as if the one condoling was really glad there was something left to gain in his own world. In all my experience, however, Bankei's voice was always sincere. Whenever he expressed happiness, I heard nothing but happiness, and whenever he expressed sorrow, sorrow was all I heard."
Man is a split. Schizophrenia is a normal condition of man, at least now. It may not have been so in the primitive world, but centuries of conditioning, civilization, culture, and religion has made man a crowd, divided, split, contradictory. One part goes in one way, another part goes just in the diametrically opposite way. It is almost impossible to keep oneself together. It is a miracle that man at all is existing. He should have disappeared long before by now. But because this split is against his nature, hence deep down somewhere hidden, the unity still survives. Because the soul of man is one, all the conditionings at the most destroy the periphery of the man, but the center remains untouched. That's how man continues to live, but his life has become a hell. The whole effort of Zen is how to drop this schizophrenia, how to drop this split personality, how to drop the divided mind of man, and how to become undivided, one, integrated, centered, crystallized. The way you are, you cannot say that you are. You don't have a being. You are a marketplace, many voices. If you want to say yes, immediately the no is there. You cannot even utter a simple word, yes, with totality. Watch. Say yes, and deep inside the no also arises with it. You cannot say a simple word like no without contradicting it at the same time. In this way, happiness is not possible unhappiness is a natural consequence of a split personality. Unhappiness because you are constantly in conflict with yourself. It is not that you are fighting with the world, you are every moment fighting with yourself. How can there be peace? How can there be silence? How can for a single moment even you can be at rest? Not for a single moment you are at rest. Even while you are sleeping, you are dreaming thousand and one things. Even while sleeping, you are tossing this way and that. A continuous conflict. You are a battlefield. You say to somebody, I love you. And the more you say, the more you repeat it, the more it appears there is suspicion behind it. If you really love, there is no need even to say, because words does not matter. Your whole being will show your love. Your eyes will show your love. Your presence will show your love. There will be no need to say it. There will be no need to repeat it continuously. You repeat to convince the other and at the same time to convince yourself, because deep down, jealousy, possessiveness, hatred, the urge to dominate, a deep power politics is hidden. Saint Paul, he uses in his epistles, in Christ 164 times. He must have been a little doubtful about it. In Christ, in Christ, in Christ. 164 times. It is too much. Once would have been enough. Even once is more than enough. It should be your being that shows that you live in Christ. And then there is no need to say it. Watch. Whenever you repeat a thing too many times, go deep down in yourself. You must be carrying the opposite within you to hide it, to suppress it, to falsify it. But you cannot falsify it. That is the problem. Your eyes will show that is hidden behind. Have you watched? You go to somebody's house and he welcomes you. But there is no welcome in his presence. He says, I am very happy to see you, glad to see you. But you don't see any gladness anywhere. In fact, he looks a little anxious, worried, apprehensive. He looks at you as if a trouble has come to his home. Have you watched people saying to you, take any seat, and at the simultaneously showing you a certain seat to take? And they say, take any seat, but they show you in a subtle gesture, take this seat. They go on contradicting themselves. Parents go on talking to their children, be yourself, and at the same time they go on teaching how one should be independent, and at the same time they go on forcing the child to be obedient. They have their own idea how the child should be. And when they say be yourself, they mean be the way they want you to be. They don't mean be yourself. continuously something else is there present, and you cannot really falsify it. But man has become cunning about that also. We don't look into each other's eyes, because eyes can show the truth. So this is thought to be part of etiquette to avoid eyes. Don't look into somebody's eyes too much, otherwise you will be thought a little uncultured, transgressing, trespassing, because it is very difficult to falsify the eyes. You can falsify the tongue very easily, because the tongue, the language, is a social byproduct, but eyes belong to your being. So you say something, but your eyes continuously show something else. Hence, in all the societies of the world, people avoid each other's eyes. They don't encounter, because that will be looking into the truth. But you can watch this contradiction in yourself, and it will be a great help. Because unless your in is just like as your out, and your out is just like your in, you can never be at rest. In Tibet, in Egypt, they say, as above, so below. Zen says, as within, so without. Unless your within becomes your without, you can never be at rest. Because your periphery will continuously be in conflict with the center. The problem is the periphery cannot win. Ultimately, only the center can win. But the periphery can delay, can postpone. The periphery can waste time and life and energy. If you go on living on the periphery and just go on pretending, not really living, you will have many faces, but you will not have your original face. I have heard Abramson had reached the grand old age of 80 and decided to celebrate. All his life he had been orthodox, wore a long beard, black hat, black suit, and black overcoat. Now, to celebrate his birthday, the old man shaved off the beard, replaced his somber black clothes with the latest style, green checked suit, a burgundy tie, and blue striped shirt, and headed for a massage parlor. As Abramson crossed the street, he was struck by a truck and killed. In heaven, he spoke to his maker, God, "Why me? I was a good husband. I gave to all the charities. I have always been a religious man. Why me?" "To tell the truth," said the Lord, "I did not recognize you." And I would like to tell you, even God will not be able to recognize you either. He changed his dress only once and became unrecognizable. And you change your periphery every moment. You change your dress every moment. You change your face, your mask every moment. Forget about God. You cannot recognize yourself. You cannot say who you are. In Zen, they have a koan, a deep object for meditation. to find out one's original face. The master says to the disciple, go and sit silently and try to find out your original face. And what they do mean when they say the original face, they say the face that you had before you were born, or the face that you will have when you die, after you have died. Because the moment a child is born, the society starts giving him false faces. The moment the child takes his first breath, corruption starts. The child has entered into the world of politics, falsification, untruth. Now layer upon layer, there will be many faces. And the clever man has many more faces than the simple man. So whatsoever the need, he immediately changes his face. He adjusts his face. Have you watched? You are sitting in your room. Your servant passes by. You have a different face for the servant. In fact, a very indifferent face. In fact, you don't look at your servant. He is not worth looking at. You don't recognize that a man, a human being just like you, has entered in the room. As if a mechanism has passed. You don't recognize the humanity of the servant. But your boss comes into the room. Immediately you are standing, wagging your tail, smiling, all smiles. You have a different face for your boss. If your wife comes, you have a different face. If your mistress comes, you have a different face. Continuously you go on adjusting, manipulating. One has to understand, otherwise one cannot find his one's original face. A man who has an original face has a unity. He remains the same. Buddha is reported to have said that the taste of an enlightened person is just like the taste of sea water. Wherever you taste it, whenever you taste it, it always tastes of the salt. The enlightened person always shows one face. Not that he is monotonous. Remember, don't misunderstand me. He is not monotonous at all. In fact, you are monotonous because your faces are all dead. He is alive, growing. But his face is his. The face goes on growing. It goes on becoming richer and richer. It goes on taking more and more awareness. It goes on becoming more and more radiant, alive, beautiful. A grace goes on increasing around it. It is surrounded by a light, but it remains the same face. You can recognize it. There is a discontinuous continuity. Are a continuous discontinuity. He changes and yet he remains the same. He remains the same and yet he goes on changing. You can recognize the continuity. And you can also recognize a constant growth. Growth always happens to the original face. Remember, false faces cannot grow. They are dead. They have no life in them. How they can grow? You can bring plastic flowers. They cannot grow. You can keep them. You can deceive people, but they cannot grow. Real flowers grow. Only life grows. So if you are not growing, you are dead. Remember that each moment should be a growth moment. One should continuously go on moving and yet remaining centered, rooted in one's being. You can deceive others. You cannot deceive yourself. But there are very, very clever people also who can deceive themselves also. They are the worst enemies of themselves. I have heard Mulla Nasruddin had been pulled from the river in what the police suspected was a suicide attempt. When they were questioning him at headquarters, he admitted that he had tried to kill himself. This is the story he told. "Yes, I tried to kill myself. The world is against me and I wanted to end it all. I was determined not to do a half-baked job of it. So I bought a piece of rope, some matches, some kerosene and a pistol. Just in case none of those work, I went down by the river. I threw the rope over a limb hanging out over the river, tied that rope around my neck, poured kerosene all over myself, and lit that match. I jumped off the river and put that pistol to my head and pulled the trigger. And guess what happened? I missed. The bullet hit the rope before I could hang myself. And I fell in the river and the water put out the fire before I could burn myself. And you know, if I had not been a good swimmer, I would have ended up drowning my full self." That's how things go. You want to do a thing and yet you don't want to do a thing. You go and yet you don't want to go. You live and yet you don't want to live. You even try to commit suicide and yet you don't want to commit suicide. That's why out of 10 suicide attempts, only one succeeds. And that too seems by some error. Nine attempts fail. People are contradictory. They just don't know how to do a thing totally. And it is natural, it can be understood that when they even try to commit suicide, they cannot be total because they have never been total in their life. They don't know what totality is. They have never done a single act with their total being. Whenever an act is total, it liberates. And whenever it is half-hearted, it simply creates a conflict in you. It dissipates energy. It is destructive. It creates bondage. The Indian word karma, you have heard, the very cause of all bondage. A karma is a karma only if it is half-hearted. Then it binds you. If it is total, then it never binds you. Then there is no bondage for you. Any act lived totally is finished. You transcend it. You never look back. Any moment lived totally leaves no trace on you. You remain unscratched, untouched by it. Your memory remains clean. You don't carry a psychological memory about it. There is no wound. If you have loved a woman totally and she dies, she dies. There is no wound left. But if you have not loved her totally and she dies, then she continues to live in the memory. Then you weep for her, you cry for her, because now you repent. There was time, there was opportunity when you may have loved her, but you could not love her. And now there is no opportunity. Now she is no more there. Now there is no way to fulfill your love. Nobody weeps and cries for somebody's death. You cry and weep for the last opportunity to love. Your mother dies. If you have loved her really, totally, then death is beautiful. Nothing wrong in it. You go and say goodbye to her. And you don't carry any wounds. Maybe a little sad, natural. She has occupied your heart for so long, and now she will not be there. But that is just a passing mood. You don't carry a wound. You don't go on crying continuously. You don't hang with the past. You did whatsoever you could. You loved her. You respected her. Now it is finished. One understands the helplessness of life. You are also going to be finished one day. Death is natural. One accepts it. If you cannot accept death, that simply shows there has been a contradiction in your life. You loved, and yet you were withholding yourself. Now, that withholding creates the problem. If you have enjoyed food, you forget all about it. Once you are finished, you are finished. You don't go on thinking about it. But if you were eating and you were not eating totally and you were thinking thousand and one other things and you were not at the dining table at all, just physically you were there and psychologically somewhere else, then you will think about food. Then food will become an obsession. That's how in the West sex has become an obsession. While you are making love to a woman or to a man, you are somewhere else. It is not a total act. It is not orgasmic. You are not lost in it. So a greed arises. So you try to satisfy that greed, that unfulfilled desire, in thousand and one ways. Pornography, blue movies, and fantasy, your private movie. You go on fantasizing about women. When a real woman is there and she is ready to love you, you are not there. And when the woman is not there, you have a woman in your fantasy. This is a very sad state of affairs. When you are eating, you are not there, and then you are thinking about food, fantasizing about it. This is happening because you are not total in your act. Always divided. While making love, you are thinking of brahmacharya, celibacy. Then, while being a celibate, you are thinking of making love. Never in tune, never in harmony. And one goes on pretending that everything is okay. So one never faces the problem. I have heard about a couple who was known all over Poland as the most ideal couple ever. 60 years of married life, and never there has been a conflict. The wife was never known to nag the husband. The husband was never known to be rude to the wife. They have lived very blissfully. At least it appeared so. They were celebrating their 60th wedding anniversary. A journalist came to interview them. "How old is your wife?" inquired the journalist. "She is 87, said the husband, "and God willing, she will live to be 100. "And how old are you?" inquired the journalist. "I am 87 too, answered the husband, "and God willing, I will live to be 101. "But why?" asked the journalist. "Would you want to live a year longer than your wife?" "To tell you the truth," said the old octogenarian, "I would like to have at least 1 year of peace." Appearances are very deceptive. Appearances may give you respectability, but they cannot give you contentment. And someday or other, in some way or other, the truth has a way of surfacing. Truth cannot be repressed forever. If it can be repressed forever eternally, then it is not truth. In the very definition of truth, one should include that truth has a way of bubbling up. You cannot go on avoiding it forever and ever. One day or other, knowingly or unknowingly, it surfaces, it reveals itself. Truth is that which reveals itself. And just the opposite is with lies. You cannot make a lie to appear truth forever and ever. One day or other, the truth will surface and the lie will be there condemned. "And are mine only lips, Nasruddin, you have ever kissed?" asked a woman Mullah Nasruddin was in love with. "Yes," said Nasruddin emphatically, "and they are the sweetest of all." You cannot avoid truth. It is better to face it. It is better to accept it. It is better to live it. Because once you start living the life of truth, authenticity, of your original face, all troubles by and by disappear. Because the conflict drops and you are no more divided. Your vice has a unity then. Your whole being becomes an orchestra. Right now you say something, your body says something else, your words say something, your tone says something else, your tongue says something, your eyes go on saying something else simultaneously. Many times people come to me and ask them how you are, and they say, "We are very, very happy." And I cannot believe, because their faces are so dull. no joy, no delight. Their eyes have no shining in them, no light. And when they say that we are happy, even the word happy does not sound very happy. It sounds as if they are dragging it. Their tone, their voice, their face, the way they are sitting or standing, everything belies, says something else. Start watching people. When they are saying they are happy, watch. Watch for a clue. Are they really happy? And immediately you will be aware that something else is saying something else. And then by and by, watch yourself. When you are saying that you are happy and you are not, there will be a disturbance in your breathing. Your breathing cannot be natural. It is impossible. Because the truth was that you were not happy. If you had said that I am unhappy, your breathing would have remained natural. There was no conflict. But you said I am happy. Immediately, you are repressing something. Something that was coming up, you have forced down. In this very effort, your breathing changes its rhythm. It is no more rhythmic. Your face is no more graceful. Your eyes become cunning. First watch others, because it will be easier to watch others. You can be more objective about them, and when you have found clues about them, use the same clues about yourself. And see, when you speak truth, your voice has a musical tone to it. When you speak untruth, something is there like a jarring note. When you speak truth, you are one together. When you speak untruth, you are not together. A conflict has arisen. Watch these subtle phenomena, because this is the way you can become one day happy. Happiness is a consequence of togetherness. So whenever you are together, not falling apart, whenever you are one in unison, that is the meaning of the word yoga. That's what we mean by a yogi, one who is together in unison, whose all parts are interrelated and not contradictory, interdependent, not in conflict, at rest with each other, and a great friendship exists within his being. He is a whole. Then suddenly you will see you are happy. Sometimes it happens you become one. In some rare moments, watching the ocean, the tremendous wildness of it, and suddenly you forget your split, your schizophrenia, you relax. Or moving in the Himalayas, seeing the virgin snow on the Himalayan peaks, suddenly a coolness surrounds you, and you need not be false, because there is no other human being to be false to. You fall together. Or listening to beautiful music, you fall together. Whenever, in whatsoever situation, you become one, a peace, a happiness, a bliss surrounds you, arises in you. You feel fulfilled. There is no need to wait for these moments. These moments can become your natural life. these extraordinary moments can become ordinary moments. That is the whole effort of Zen. You can live an extraordinary life in a very ordinary life. Cutting woods, chopping woods, carrying water from the well, and you can be tremendously at ease with yourself. Cleaning the floor, cooking food, washing the clothes, you can be perfectly at ease, because the whole question is, if you are doing your action totally, enjoying, delighting in it, the society is not in favor of an integrated man. So remember, the society cannot help you. It will create all sorts of hindrances for your growth. Because only a disintegrated man can be manipulated. The politicians can dominate him. The teachers can dominate him. The religious priests can dominate him. The parents can dominate him. Only a disintegrated soul can be forced into slavery. Integrated, you are free. Integrated, you become rebellious. Integrated, you start doing your own thing. Integrated, you listen to your own heart and you follow your own heart wherever it leads. Such type of individuals can be dangerous for the so-called dead society. They can create trouble. They have always created trouble, a Jesus, a Socrates, a Buddha. They have always been troublesome because they are so integrated that they can be independent. And they are so blissfully living that they don't bother about other nonsense. Try to understand it. If you are unhappy, you will become ambitious. If you are happy, ambition will disappear. Who bothers to become a prime minister unless you are a little insane? Who bothers to become the richest man of the world unless you are mad? Who bothers for fame? Because you cannot eat it, you cannot love it, you cannot sleep with it. In fact, the more famous you become, the more difficult it becomes to be happy. The more richer you are, the more worries you have, problems of security, future. And whatsoever you have hoarded, against others, they are constantly watching for a right opportunity to take it back. Whatsoever you hoard out of violence. Of course, if you have been violent, then others can be violent to you. They are just waiting for the right moment. Richer you get, more worries, more problems, more fears. Who bothers if one is happy? It is said, a Taoist mystic was sought by the Emperor of China because he has heard that he is very wise, and the Emperor wanted him to become his Prime Minister. So two ambassadors were sent to him.
with a golden chariot following them, with many presents from the courts. Those two ambassadors were simply puzzled because they found this wise man fishing, sitting on the bank of a small river, very poor, just ordinary. But the king has ordered, so they told him that the king wants you to become his prime minister, and you are welcome, and we have come to take you. The mystic looked at the ambassadors, and then he looked around. A turtle was wagging his tail in the mud, enjoying, just around by the side of the river in a small pool. The mystic said, look at that turtle. The ambassador said, we don't understand, what do you mean? He said, I have heard that there is a turtle in the emperor's palace, 3,000 years old, dead, of course, encased in gold, with valuable diamonds, very precious. And that turtle, the dead turtle, is worshipped. If you ask this alive turtle, would you like to become the dead turtle of the king's palace? You will be encased in gold, surrounded with precious stones, and you will be worshipped by the king himself. What do you think this turtle will choose? Would he like to go to the palace, or he would like to wag his tail in the mud? They said, of course he would like to wag his tail in the mud. He said, do you think I am foolish than the turtle? Go back. I would like to wag my tail here in this mud, but I would like to be alive. Who has ever heard of anybody living in a palace and alive? Difficult. Almost impossible. If you are unhappy, then you become ambitious. Because an unhappy person thinks that if I attain much wealth, I will become happy. The unhappy person thinks if I become the prime minister, the president, then I will become happy. An unhappy person starts projecting in the future. A happy person lives here now, and he is so happy, so infinitely happy, he has no future. He has no concern for the future. That's what Jesus means when he says, think not of the morrow. Look at the lilies in the fields. Even the great Emperor Solomon was not so beautiful, arrayed in his precious dresses, as these poor flowers of lilies are beautiful. Look at the grandeur, and they toil not, and they think not for the morrow. The whole society depends on creating ambition in you. Ambition means a conflict. Ambition means that whatsoever you are wrong. You have to be somebody else. Wherever you are wrong. You have to be somewhere else. A constant madness to be somewhere else, to be somebody else, is what ambition is. So every child is corrupted, destroyed. The parents were destroyed by their parents, and so on and so forth. And they go on destroying their children. Of course, they don't know what else to do. They simply repeat the old pattern. Whatsoever was done to them by their parents, they do to their children. They say, go to the school and come first. Go to the university and attain the gold medal. Then their whole life, they are always chasing and chasing the gold medals. They live in a dream. and because of this they have to follow many things which are against their nature. They have to do many things which are against their nature. If they are to attain some goals in the society, they have to follow the society. And society is constantly trying to force something on you, a certain morality, a certain religion. Whether it suits you or not is not the problem. Whether it is going to help your being flower is not the problem. The society goes on enforcing things on you. One day I met Mulla Nasruddin on the road. He was walking with his two children. So I said, "How are your children?" He said, "Both are good." I said, "How old they are?" He said, "Doctor is 5 and the lawyer is 7. Already the future fixed in the mind of the father. One has to become the doctor, another has to become something else. The children have not been asked. Now, the father will enforce, and he can enforce. He has powers. The children are helpless. And if the child was going to become a singer and cannot become a singer, and he has to become a doctor, he will never feel at ease. He will be false. He will carry something false, continuously dragging himself. His whole life will be destroyed. It will be a sheer wastage. There are doctors who would have been beautiful singers or dancers or poets, and there are poets who would have been better to be a doctor or a surgeon. There are poets who should have been engineers, scientists. There are scientists who should have been somewhere else. It seems everybody is in some wrong place, because nobody has been allowed to be spontaneous and to be oneself. First, the society forces you to be something that you are not meant to be. And nobody else can know who you are meant to be. Your destiny has to unfold within you. It is only you left to yourself. The society can help. If a real right society exists someday in the world, it will simply help you. It will not give you directions. It will give you all support to be yourself. But this society first tries you to make somebody else. Imitators, carbon copies. And when you have become carbon copies, then people start saying that you are not yourself. A Jewish mama found herself sitting next to a young man on a bus. She looked at him quizzically for a few moments, then nudged him in the ribs and said confidentially, "You are a Jewish boy, are not you?" He said, "Ah, no, as a matter of fact, I am not." She laughed and said, "Ah, go on, I am Jewish myself. I can always tell. You are a Jewess, are not you?" He said, "No, missus, I am not." She said, "What is the matter? You ashamed of it or something? You are Jewess." So just to keep her quiet, the young chap said, "All right, if it will make you happy, yes, I am Jewess." She said, "That's funny, you don't look like Jewess." That's how it goes on. First, everybody is trying to convince you, you are this. And once you are that, suddenly you also find, and everybody else starts saying that you don't look yourself. What is wrong with you? You look unhappy. You look sad. You look frustrated. You look depressed. What is the matter with you? First they try to force you to be somebody else that you are not. And then they want you to be happy also. This is impossible. You can be happy only if you become yourself. There is no other way to be happy. Nothing can be done about it. It is how it is. You can be happy only if you are yourself. And it is very difficult to find out now who you are, because you have been so much confused. You have been so much crippled. And the society has entered so deep down in you that it has become your conscience. Now your parents may be dead, your teachers may be dead, or even if they are alive, they are no more sitting on your head. But still, whatsoever they have taught you goes on speaking in subtle whisperings within you. It has become your conscience. The parental voice has become your ego. If you do something against it, it immediately condemns you. If you do something accordingly, it applauds you, appreciates you. Still you go on being dominated by the dead. I have heard Rothstein owed $100 to Wiener. The debt was past due and Rothstein was broke, so he borrowed the $100 from Spivak and paid Wiener. A week later, Rothstein borrowed back the $100 from Wiener and paid Spivak. Another week went by and Rothstein borrowed back the $100 from Spivak to pay Wiener. He repeated this transaction several times until finally he called them up and said, "Fellas, this is a lot of bother. Why don't you two exchange the $100 every week and keep me out of it?" This is how it has happened. First your father, your mother, your teachers, your priests, they have put things in your mind. Then one day they come, "Now you be on your own. Keep us out." Now the conscience goes on functioning as a subtle agent. Remember, conscience is your bondage. A real man is conscious but has no conscience. An unreal man is unconscious and has a very strong conscience. Conscience is given by others to you. Consciousness has to be attained by you. Consciousness is your earned being, your earned quality of awareness. Conscience is given by others who wanted to manipulate you in their own ways. They had their own ideas and they manipulated you. They coerced you. They tortured you into certain directions. They may not have been aware themselves. They were tortured by their parents. This is how the future is dominated by the past and the present is dominated by the dead. A real man has to drop his conscience. The parental voice has to be dropped. There are few sayings of Jesus, very rude, but true to the very core. He says, "Unless you hate your father and mother, you will not be able to follow me." Now this looks too rude. The language is rude. But what he means is what I am saying to you. Unless you drop the conscience. He is not saying to hate your father and mother. He is saying to hate the mother and father's vice inside you. Unless you drop that, you will never be free. And you will remain split. And you will have many vices in you. And you will never become one. You have lost your original face. People have painted too much your face. According to their own ideas, they have made you. Now you have to take the whole process in your hands. You have to become aware that you are not here to fulfill anybody else's expectations. You are to attend to your destiny. So don't choose the safer way that you have been choosing up to now. It is safer to follow the society, because then the society does not create trouble to you. It is very, very dangerous to follow your own vice. Very dangerous to follow yourself, because then you are alone and the society is not there to support you. This used to tell a story of the Russian dictator Stalin. The dictator walked into a movie incognito and sat in the last row. Suddenly his picture flashed on the screen and everybody rose in salute. He remained seated, enjoying the spectacle of his power, when suddenly an usher poked him in the back and whispered harshly, "You had better got up too, if you know what is good for you. I don't like him any more than you do. But you had better get up. It is safer." And we have been choosing the safer, the secure, the socially approved. You will have to get out of it. There are two ways to get out of the socially approved. One is the way of the sinner, the criminal. Another is the way of the saint, the holy man. These are the two ways to get out of the structured being that the society has given to you, the role that the society has given you to play. One is the criminal way. That's a reactionary way, foolish. It is not going to help you. You may get out of the social structure, you will find yourself in the prison. That is not going to help much. You cannot go very far on that way. That too is a way of getting out of the bondage of the society. The criminal is also trying to be free. Of course, he does not know how to be free. So he gets more in bondage. But his desire is the same as that of the saint. He is moving in a wrong direction. But his desire is the same. Society has forced many people to be criminals, because their structure is too much and people don't know how to get out of it. So they do something wrong just to get out of it. The saint is also doing the same, but he is trying to create devices. Meditation is a device. Zazen is a device to get out of the society without becoming a criminal. So remember that danger is there. If you understand me and you think, right, I will get out of the society, and you don't understand what I mean by meditation, you will become a criminal. That's how hippies are doing in the West. They are hankering for freedom. Their desire is right, absolutely right. They have absolute birthright to be free, but they don't know yet the way of the saint. So knowingly, unknowingly, they are moving unto the path of the sinners. Sooner or later, they will be crushed by the society. Just to be free of the society is not enough. To be free and responsible, to be free and responsibly free, only then you are free. Otherwise you will be caught in another pattern. The hippie is reacting. The people of Zen are rebelling. In reaction you just go to the opposite. If the society says no drugs, you say drugs are the only panacea. If the society says do this, you immediately do just the opposite. But remember, doing the opposite, you are still in the trap of the society. Because the society has decided what you should do. Even the opposite is decided by the society. The society said no drugs, you say I'm going to take drugs. By saying no, the society has decided your direction. So the one who is conventional is within the society, and one who has reacted against it again gets caught into the same society. One says yes to the society, another says no to the society, but both react to the society. The man who really wants to be free says neither yes nor no. The language is created by the society, so the language is simply contradictory. Either you have to say yes or you have to say no. Sometimes you don't want to say either yes or no, but there is no word. Just lately, Edward de Bono has done a great service to humanity. He has invented a new word, po, just in the middle of no and yes. Because there are situations when you would like to say po. You mean I don't want to say yes, I don't want to say no, I don't want to take any alternative between these two. I want to be free. If I say yes, I am caught. You decided my yes. If I say no, you decided my no in the opposite direction. I say po. A Zen person says po. The hippie says no. And lot is the difference. Great is the difference. The language is decided by the contradictory mind. So everything is divided in two. Heaven and hell, God and devil, yes and no, good and bad, the sinner and the saint, everything is divided into, and in life, in fact, it is totally different, it is a rainbow. All the seven colors are there. There are many stages between the saint and the sinner. There are many possibilities between yes and no, and dark and light are not only two possibilities. These are two poles. Between these two are all the rays, all the colors of the rainbow. But the Aristotelian logic, which is the logic of the society, divides only into that too creates a falsity in man. If you don't want to say yes and you don't want to say no, what you will do? The language does not give you any other alternative. Somebody says, do you love me? What you are going to say? If you say yes, it may not be true. If you say no, that may also may not be true. You would like simply to shrug your shoulders, but in language there is no way to shrug your shoulders. you may like to remain uncommitted. I have heard about a man who went to visit a church with his wife. The church had over the portal the inscription, "This is the house of God. This is the gate of heaven." The man must have been a logician, a follower of Aristotle. He glanced at these words, tried the door and found it locked, turned to his wife and said, "In other words, go to hell, because the door to heaven is closed. So where to go? In other words, go to hell." Life is divided in two. That is too miserly a division. Life is much richer. Life is neither white nor black, it is grey. White is one end of it, black is another end of it, but life is grey. If you don't know that language is also a social trap, morality is also a social trap, formality is also a social trap, etiquette is also a social trap, you will not be able to get out of it. And this is possible only if you become very, very aware, very keenly aware, sincerely aware. Then you will see traps all around. Don't react to them, because sinners have always been there, criminals have always been there, who have tried to break out of the bounds of the society, but they never could get very far. They were always caught. The only way to get out of it is a very subtle one, and that is to get within yourself so deeply that the society cannot reach there. That's the only way to become true, to get to your center. That's what Zen is all about. Once, at a scientific gathering, a young physicist approached British astronomer Sir Arthur Eddington and asked, "Is it true, Sir Arthur, that you are one of the only three men in the world who really understand Einstein's theory of relativity?" Then, noting the look of discomfort that came into the astronomer's face, he apologized. "I am sorry," he said. "I did not mean to embarrass you. I know how modest you are." "Not at all," said Eddington. "I was just wondering who the third man could be." All your social formality, modesty, politeness is just a layer, very thin layer, as if you pour oil on water and a thin film layer of the oil surrounds it. It is not even skin deep. Don't be deceived by it. The only way to get beyond is to go within. You can become rude. That is happening. Just to become sincere, people are becoming rude. That is not the way. Just to be honest, people are becoming violent. Just to be true, they are becoming angry and insane. That is not the way. If you want to be true, move to the center. Because if you remain on the periphery, you will remain untrue. Let your center dominate the periphery. You move to the center. And be in a hurry. I don't mean be impatient. I mean don't be lazy. Because the problem is, if you have lived too long in the society and you have followed its rules and regulations for long enough, one becomes accustomed to it. One forgets that it is a bondage. One forgets that these are chains. The chains start appearing like ornaments. You in fact start protecting them. It happened to celebrate their 30th wedding anniversary. Mullah Nasruddin came home and presented his wife with a little monkey. "Are you crazy or something?" shouted Mrs. Nasruddin. "Where the hell are we gonna keep a monkey?" "Don't worry," said Nasruddin. "He will sleep right in the bed with us." "And what about the smell? If I could stand it for 30 years, he will get used to it soon. Don't be worried." Be in a hurry, because once you get settled, it will be difficult. Difficult because you will not realize that you are in bondage. If you can escape younger, it will be easier. The older you grow, the more difficult it becomes. Now, the story. After Bakei had passed away, a blind man who lived near the master's temple said to a friend, "Since I am blind, I cannot watch a person's face, so I must judge his character by the sound of his voice. Ordinarily, when I hear someone congratulate another upon his happiness or success, I also hear a secret tone of envy. When condolence is expressed for the misfortune of another, I hear pleasure and satisfaction. As if the one condoling was really glad there was something left to gain in his own world. In all my experience, however, Bakei's voice was always sincere. Whenever he expressed happiness, I heard nothing but happiness. And whenever he expressed sorrow, sorrow was all I heard. This is the greatest homage that can be done to a man, to the memory of a man." Bakei was one of the great Zen masters. This blind man who used to live near the temple could not see people's faces. Blind people become very, very perceptive. Because they are blind, they become very perceptive. Because their eyes are not functioning, the whole energy and the capacity to see moves to their ears. Their ears become substitutes of eyes. And there is a difference between eyes and ears. Eyes are linear. They look only in one direction. Ears are not linear. The ears hear from all directions. The sound is caught from all directions. Ears are more total than eyes. Eyes just focus. Eyes are more concentrated. Ears are more meditative. Hence, all the meditators close their eyes. Because with the eyes, your mind becomes linear. It is easy to concentrate with the eyes, difficult to meditate. Remember the difference. When you concentrate, you focus your mind exclusively on something. And everything else
is excluded out of it. You include only a certain thing on which you are concentrating, and everything is excluded. You focus, but ears are more meditative. They include all. Everything that happens around, if you are listening to me, you are also listening to the words. It is simultaneously happening. To the ears, existence is simultaneous. To the eyes, it is linear, gradual. If I start looking from this side to that side, first I will see Amida, then somebody else, then Tirtha, then somebody else, then somebody else. You are all together here. But eyes will create a linear procession, which is the falsification of reality. You are not here in a queue. You are all together here. But if I listen with my ears, with closed eyes, your breathing, your being, then you are all together here. Ears are closer to existence than eyes. And it is a misfortune that ears have been neglected and eyes have become very predominant. Psychologists say that 80% of human knowledge is through the eyes. 80%. It is too much. It has become almost dictatorial. The eyes have become the dictators. Ears are closer to existence, to the diffused existence, to the togetherness of existence. There are methods, particularly in Zen, when one simply sits and listens to existence, not concentrating anywhere. It is easier for eyes to be closed. You can open them, you can close them. The mind can manipulate your eyes. Ears you cannot close. They are always open. So if your emphasis moves from eyes to ears, you will become more open. The eyes can be manipulated easily. The mind can play tricks with the eyes. With ears, it is more difficult to play tricks. It happens, if you have come across a blind man, you will see. He starts seeing by his ears. And he can see many subtle nuances which eyes cannot see. He becomes more perceptive. By the sound, by the tone, by a smile, wavering in the tone, fluctuations in the tone, he starts seeing deeply in you. And because he is not part of the society belongs to those who have eyes. A blind man is almost an outcast, out of the society. So you don't know how to deceive a blind man. You know how to deceive people who have eyes. You don't know how to deceive a blind man. You have never practiced it. It has never happened. Rarely you come across a blind man. He starts seeing many things. Even by our footsteps, by the sound of your footsteps, he starts recognizing many things in you. Are you a man rooted in the earth? grounded in the earth, a blind man can see it just by our footsteps. Hear you, whether you are grounded or not. Every person moves in a different way, walks in a different way. If a Buddha walks, he is tremendously grounded. His legs are almost like roots of a tree. He is in deep contact with the earth. He is nourished by the earth. The earth is nourished by him. There is a continuous transfer of energy. Ordinarily, people are uprooted trees. They walk as if they are uprooted. They don't have roots in the earth. They are not grounded. You sometimes try, just stand with naked feet on earth or on the sand on a beach and just feel that your legs are like roots and they are reaching deep into the earth and you start swaying like a tree with the wind. Forget that you are a man. Think yourself as a tree and soon you will see something transpires between your feet and the earth. It may take a little time because you have forgotten the language and one day you will see something is transpiring. Something is being given by the earth to the feet and you are also returning, responding. And the day it will happen, you will start walking in a totally new way. Rooted, solid, not fragile, not sad, more alive, full of energy. You will be less tired and your footsteps will have a different quality. A blind man can immediately say whether this man is rooted in the earth or not. A man who is a thief walks in a different way, continuously afraid. The fear enters into the footsteps, into the sound of the footsteps. A man who is walking in his own home, at ease, walks in a different way. The blind man who lived near Bakay's temple must have known thousands of people. He was a beggar. He said when Bakay died, ordinarily, when I hear someone congratulate another upon his happiness or success, I also hear a secret tone of envy. When people congratulate another, deep down they are jealous. The envy is there. It is just a social formality that they are fulfilling. Their voice will show it. You watch, you start watching life. It is a beautiful thing to watch. Many things are happening around you continuously. You are missing tremendous experiences. Watch people's voices, somebody congratulating someone. Just try to see what his voice says. Not what he is saying, but what his voice says. And immediately you will understand what this blind man means. A subtle jealousy, envy, pain, misery, frustration that somebody else has succeeded and he has not succeeded. Just a lip service. When condolence is expressed for the misfortune of another, I hear pleasure and satisfaction. The second thing is still deeper. The first thing you can understand, you can say, right, true. There is jealousy when you congratulate somebody. But the blind man says, when you condole, when you say somebody has died or somebody has gone bankrupt
or somebody's house has burnt, and you go and you sympathize and you say it was very bad. Deep down there is a subtle satisfaction and pleasure, says the blind man, because deep down you are feeling good that your house has not been burnt, somebody else. Your wife has not died, somebody else. At least your child is still alive, somebody else has died. God has not been so cruel to you. You feel a subtle joy. Whenever you sympathize or express condolence, watch. Or when you watch others doing that, just look deep down into their voice. Something else is also present. That is bound to be so. In your love, hatred is present. Even when you laugh, something deep down goes on crying within you. Your laughter is not pure. Your laughter can be changed into crying very easily. Your crying can be changed into laughter very easily. You know it. You love a person and you can hate him any moment. You were ready to die for him and now you are ready to kill him. A friend can become foe any moment. Man is contradictory, split, schizophrenic. And the blind man said, in all my experience, however, Bakay's voice was always sincere. Whenever he expressed happiness, I heard nothing but happiness. It was pure, uncontaminated by the opposite, uncorrupted, uncontradicted. It was simple. It was not complex. It was sincere. And whenever he expressed sorrow, sorrow was all I heard. This simplicity is the goal of Zen. This sincerity is the goal of Zen. I was reading few lines of T.S. Eliot the other day. A condition of complete simplicity, casting not less than everything, and all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well. When the tongues of flame are enfolded into the crown knot of fire, and the fire and the rose are one. They express the very essence of Zen. And the fire and the rose are one. There comes a moment of simplicity when the energy that is invested in hatred and the energy that is invested in love are released from their polar opposites, and the fire and the rose are one. Then man is simply simple. He has no contradictions in him. You can taste him. His taste is always the same. And whatsoever he does it totally. There is no other way. He cannot do even a small thing without being total in it. Even a small gesture of his hand, and he is totally there in that gesture. He looks at you and he is there in his look, totally there. He touches you. It is not only his hand that touches you, it is his whole being. Ordinarily, we are manipulating things, chairs, tables, thousand and one things, and we have forgotten that hands are meant for something more also, not just manipulating things. So when you touch your beloved's hand, you touch as if you are touching a table. You have forgotten that hands are not just to manipulate, they are to give also. The hands have become dead. When a man like Bankei will touch, then you will know what touch is. He will flow from his touch totally in you. He will pour himself in you. His touch will be a gift. His look will be a gift. Because he has attained. He has given the ultimate gift of his own being to himself. And the fire and the rose are one. Listen to your heart. Move according to your heart. Whatsoever the stake, a condition of complete simplicity, casting not less than everything. To be simple is arduous, because to be simple, it casts everything that you have. You have to lose all to be simple. That's why people have chosen to be complex and they have forgotten to be simple. But only a simple heart throbs with God hand in hand. Only a simple heart sings with God in deep harmony. To reach to that point, you will have to find your heart, your own throb, your own beat. This is my way, Nietzsche used to say. Where is yours? Thus I answered those who asked me the way, for the way that does not exist. This is my way, where is yours? Thus I answered those who asked me the way, for the way that does not exist. Only ways exist. The way does not exist. Your way, my way, yes, but the way, no. Zen is an absolutely individual path. It is not a religion in the sense of Christianity. It is not a religion in the sense of any organization. One has to become individual. The word individual is good. It simply means one who cannot be divided. Indivisible means individual. You are not yet individuals because you are split. Become one and you will be individuals. Great is the stake. Great is the risk, but it is worth. Enough for today.